Fan Morning Show, Sportsnet 590, The Fan, Ben and Spring Gunning. I want to pick up on something Jason Kugelich just mentioned in the last segment.
Okay.
This is not a Connor McDavid situation with John Tavares. The Maple Leafs and John Tavares and the Maple Leafs and Matthew Nyes, for that matter, could have been talking contract throughout the entirety of this season,
totally.
Right? This past season.
Yeah, absolutely. Could have had any amount of conversations they want.
And I don't think it's a surprise to anybody that Mitch Marner appears to be on the verge of not being a Toronto Maple Leaf, right?
No, if you are, I would just like, how big is the rock you've been living under?
Yeah, I think Brad Treliving probably had a good sense that that was going to happen.
Uh-huh. When he offered him $13.5 million, he said no thanks. Yeah, probably then, yeah.
Yeah. How is this agreement not already in place between John Tavares and the Toronto Maple Leafs? Or how is there not some understanding of what it would take and whether John Tavares would accept or not? Like, I'm sure Brad Treliving saw a vision where it's like, yeah, we got to change the DNA. And maybe that means no John Tavares, certainly at a certain price. But mm-hmm. at a certain price, also, we have no choice but to bring him back because we still need center depth.
Yes.
And how is that price not already well established that we wouldn't be having these conversations at this point?
I keep going back to the thing that I ultimately think that John Tavares has like a drop dead date of like, you negotiate like your life is on the line to his agent. And then at a certain point in time, you're going to make your decision. Because the idea that this is going to go beyond July 1st, and then this is good, the two sides are going to come to fruition when teams are actually allowed to start throwing money in John Tavares' face that is a lot more than the, I don't know, 4.5 or honestly even 5 that the Leafs may be fine to sign him to. So I think that if you're Brad Treliving, you also have to understand that there's nothing that by not signing John Tavares yet, there's no piece of business that this is stopping you from doing, right? Like, you could still negotiate with Matthew Nyes and sign him to some contract. If this was happening post July 1st, very, very different conversation. Because then that is gumming up the works of trying to spend that cap space and using it in a smart way. But at this point in time, I think that this is what happens when there's a negotiation where two sides want to be together, but they ultimately have time to continue to fight over dollars and cents. Like, I think it is kind of that simple. And it is going to come down to, I'm going to say it again, not a game of chicken, but the chicken dance between the Leafs and John Tavares of who's going to blink at the very last minute. Because it's going to come to the last minute. I would be floored if 3 days before July 1, it's like, okay, John Tavares has come to his senses. He may very well come to his senses, but it's going to be at the absolute last minute, I personally think.
To me, it's the conversation you're having during the season is, okay, is there a negotiation or are you signing what we put in front of you? And if it's, no, there's a negotiation, then it's okay, well, we're making our peace with not having John Tavares as a Toronto Maple Leaf in the 25-26 season. So to that point, right, like nobody's making the deal where, hey, would you go a year without making the playoffs just to send a message? No, but I think there's a pretty clear and a legitimate case to be made that the Maple Leafs are worse without John Tavares, even if it's John Tavares at $6 or maybe even $7 million.
For next year, absolutely.
Would you make that sacrifice of being a worse team without John Tavares to send this message, not just to the world,
sure,
but like internally that, hey, that we're not doing business the same way anymore. And we're not just giving out no trade clauses mm-hmm. and the maximum allowable contract to every single person forever from this point
sure.
forward. Would you, again, not sacrificing, like, you're still trying to be a good team. You're not
sure.
hunting on 25-26.
Are you sure?
I mean, if that's your operating in that way, I don't know how you're doing that.
No, I just think that if
it's not your intent,
but no, okay.
it might be yes. the end result,
yes.
right?
Yes.
You're not intent on missing the playoffs.
No.
You're going to be worse without John Tavares.
Right.
Is that a sacrifice you'd be willing to make just to send that message to everybody that you're not going to be pushed around anymore?
No, because it's not sending a message to the people that matter. It is sending a message to 34-year-olds that have already been on the Toronto Maple Leafs. That doesn't, I don't think by taking a hard line with John Tavares that proves to Matthew Nyes that they're going to do the same with him. I think they're very different things. It is signing a player who, again, as much as I'm sitting here going, you need him, you have to find a way to have this player back. No, it shouldn't be at $7 million, but you have to find a way. I think it's also very different than the import of Matthew Nyes for the next 10 years of this org. So no, I don't think it is worth that to send the message to John Tavares. If the argument is that like signing John Tavares to the $7 million deal is going to gum up the next 3 years and you can't do it, that can be the argument, but it can't be to send a message. You have to do that with someone who has less beholden to the market. Like, if you're going to do that thing, take the hard stance and the hard line, it's not with John Tavares, it's with Matthew Nyes. And I'm not saying you can't do that, and obviously it's very different doing that with an RFA than it is a UFA, but I think I don't think by sending a message to Tavares you get anything across in the negotiation with Matthew Nyes or the future one with Easton Cowan or Ben Danford or, you know, any of these kids that maybe one day will be impact players for the Toronto Maple Leafs, for me.
Yeah. What if you just hold firm to your, whatever, $4.5 million sure. dollar offer, and it's a take it or leave it, John Tavares.
Yep.
We would love to have you back at this number. And I know you're worth more than this on the open market, but we can't afford to do that, especially yep. with the impending extension coming to Matthew Nyes and our willingness to backfill Mitch Marner's $11 million and the expense of getting Brad Marchand in free agency. How much are you of the belief that ultimately push comes to shove, John Tavares is saying, "All right, screw it, I'll take the deal"? Because you were very much of the belief that would happen with Mitch Marner.
Yeah, I was.
And now, you were wrong.
Now, you're right. Now, I would say that I have not heard from anybody close to or like scuttlebutt out of the Tavares camp that he is fed up and he is unhappy, which we started to begin to hear with Marner. Now, hey, there's time between now and the end of free agency. I do ultimately think it's very, very different scenarios, though. It's a guy in a prime of his career versus a guy who's always been already been an enemy one place. And, you know, I don't know that John Tavares would become like true enemy, but he loses a lot of the liquidity he got in the market of like, or the cachet he got in the market of being the guy who came home. If you do leave after it doesn't work out, you lose a lot of that as well. So I am of the belief that if the Leafs hold relatively firm, that they will ultimately get the player. And that is a game of chicken that Brad Treliving has to be willing to play.
Just, yeah, very strange that we're at this place. Very strange that somebody, and it seems to be the John Tavares side, is using the media as well to impact negotiations here. Maybe it's the other side. If it was, I guess, you know, considering most of the discourse I've seen, it would make the most sense if it was the Leafs side of things, right? But I could see a world in which the Tavares camp, you know, looks at the number they could get and say, you know what, we're actually already doing our part here.
Yeah.
They're pushing us to a place that is unfair.
I don't doubt for a second that the Tavares side is using it. I just don't think it's solely them. Like, I think the Leafs are just as likely and honestly benefit just as much to use their bully pulpit to point out that Matt Duchene has a $4.5 million contract that would look great beside John Tavares' name.
All right, let's talk to Anthony Petrelli, writer of Leafs Notebook on Maple Leafs Hot Stove, as well as the MLHS podcast. How's it going, Anthony?
I'm good, guys. How about you?
Good. So where are you on the Tavares thing? Because, yeah, they're worse without him, but I thought this was going to be the coup of the offseason, getting a 75-point centerman back at well below market value.
Yeah, I mean, I'm still kind of curious to see how it plays out. Like, there's a ton of time left. You know, I heard you guys just now chatting. I'd still lean towards it more likely gets done than not. So It's funny. It's kind of like the silly time of year, right, where all the rumors fly around. And a lot of the times people don't actually know anything, but they hear the rumors fly and everyone comes to conclusions about what's happening or how a player's positioning themselves or whatever the case is. And we don't know any of it. Like, I think you just got to see how the number plays out. And then we look at it and kind of go from there. So I think there's a ton of numbers that people might not necessarily like, but, you know, to your point, if you end up getting a guy who is capable of scoring 30 goals again next year and capable of, you know, having a highly productive year at a position that every team in the league needs, and he's signing for like $5 million plus or minus, I mean, that is a really good deal on the open market still.
Yeah, I wholeheartedly agree. Let's say Tavares is holding firm, and you know he's not asking for seven, but it's $6 million. How willing should the Leafs be to take a step back? And I don't look at it necessarily from the point of like that sends a message to everybody, but it's more just it sends a message to themselves that they want to keep a relatively clean cap sheet. Like, how willing should there be to be a bit of a step back year? Because if you lose Mitch Marner and John Tavares, I don't care who you backfill it with in free agency. I don't think you're necessarily replacing those players. Like, how willing in the prime of Austin Matthews and the prime of William Nylander, and they actually somehow have two goalies that can make saves and a good blue line, should they be willing to take a step back? Because if you do not bring back Tavares and Marner, I just don't see a way that the team isn't at least a little worse next year.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of interesting. Yeah, like, I don't think they're going to win the division next year. Like, I was to handicap that right now, I'd say probably not, but I don't know if the team will be worse in a weird way. Like, they weren't good at controlling play. Like, every time we watched them play a good team, they spent most of the night in their own end. And they played Ottawa in the first round. There were some stretches that were ugly, but ultimately I thought the Leafs were just a better team. And, you know, and then they played Florida, and Florida kind of did it to everybody, so it's hard to kind of judge that. But, you know, the team themselves, it's not like they dominated last season. They ended up having a good record, and they ended up winning the division. But I don't think they could look at that and say that that team was, like, really good, like, constantly just, you know, dictating play and dictating things on their terms. Like, they're going to take a step back on talent regardless, but I do wonder if they could be a better hockey team. Like, it's a really fine line to be threading there. I'm not saying it'll play out that way, but like, I don't know if it has to necessarily be all completely doom and gloom. I honestly, a large part of it is just like, how healthy is Matthews going to be? Like, if Matthews is going to play like he did last season, they're probably in tough.
Yeah.
But if he can play like the guy that I think everyone, you know, is capable, you know, knows he's capable of playing, then I still think they're going to be a really good team. Like, I don't think it has to be a huge step back. I think they're just going to be a different kind of hockey team, but one that I think could still be a problem. They're really good in net. They have they have one of the best goalie tandems in the league. They have a good veteran defense, 1-6, 1-7, if you want to call it that. Like, it's a deep group. They lack a top guy, but it's a deep, solid group. You know, Matthews in the prime of his career, to your point, like, he has a responsibility on his end as well. Like, he's got to pick up some of the slack. Like, he didn't have an elite year last year to his standards. You know, William Nylander, obviously, like, he's second in the league in goals last year. Like, there's enough around it that it doesn't have to be, like, they should very confidently be a playoff team. From there, I don't know, they got a ton of cap space to play with. So it's kind of like, how can they, you know, change things around? And then to your point, like, yeah, they should play firm with John Tavares. Like, they can't just, you know, it's not a blank check situation or like, what's going to get done. It's like, this is the number that works for us. And if not, then we have to do something different.
Yeah. That might not be the deal with the unrestricted free agents they may be targeting, including Brad Marchand. And maybe that's the way you backfill some of the departure of talent is through overspending in unrestricted free agency. But I know you have your trade targets article up right now on Maple Leafs Hot Stove. Like, the other way to do it would be the way the Panthers did it and find the guys who have yet to reach their potential and acquire them in trade. Who are those guys? Who are the guys the Maple Leafs can unearth as the next just diamond in the rough?
It's so hard, right? Like, we'll throw out names and discuss them. And obviously the Panthers look like geniuses now, but it's like, you know, if you kind of look back a few years earlier to when the Panthers started making some of those moves, like, Buffalo thought they did it when they acquired Brandon Montour, right? Like, he was supposed to be a big deal there and didn't work out. And then Florida comes in and grabs him for, you know, I think it was a third round pick at the trade deadline. And then he panned out all of a sudden. It's like, you know, Sam Bennett wasn't productive at the end of his tenure in Calgary at all. I think he had like 11 points in like some 60 odd games or something around that area. It's like, now he's their second line center and has two cup rings on his finger. or on his fingers. So, you know, like it, part of it is you kind of have to look at who could be available. It's like, you know, Dawson Mercer, I think, is intriguing. Like, you know, first round pick pedigree, played for Team Canada. You know, he had a 27 goal season already under his belt, which is impressive. He is 19 and 20. Like, I don't know how available he is, but he was on Nick Kypreos's trade board on sportsnet.ca. So that kind of caught my eye as like, this is still a, you know, 23, 24 year old kid that has had some productive seasons already in the league. $4 million is not the worst contract. It's like, could the Leafs make a trade like that work? That'll be tricky for them across the board. Like, they don't have a ton of draft picks to throw around, but at the same time, every team is trying to get better right now, other than maybe Pittsburgh. You know, that seems to kind of be the consensus around the league. So I don't know if draft picks are really getting teams anywhere, right? I think it's more about maneuvering cap space the way the Mason Marchment trade played out. And, you know, potentially throwing players back, you know, more hockey type trade. So, you know, Dawson Mercer stands out. Like, Lawson Krause's name has kind of been out and around. And obviously, you know, he was healthy scratch this year and makes over $4 million. And he was healthy scratch once, so don't want to make it sound like more than it was. But that is a kind of an eyebrow raiser when a guy with that much money gets scratched. And he had 18 points last year. Like, Steven Lorenz had more points than him last year. So, you know, you're like, it doesn't sound pretty is the point. Kind of like Montour and Bennett at the time. Like, you have to take some swings on young guys and hope that a change of scenery and your evaluation was correct and you could put them in a different position. Like, you know, playing beside Nylander is a sell. Like, he's a really good player. Like we saw him prop up like Pontus Holmberg last year. Like players with more pedigree will do really well beside him, or, you know, potentially Matthews, or like whatever the case is. Like, there are good selling points to Toronto.
Yeah, I think the fascinating thing to come out of all this, and, you know, if Tavares is back, this changes things slightly, but not really. Marner being gone is really what does this, is what does it do to kind of truly, and this is a wild thing to say about the, I guess for the next 6 days, the highest paid player in the league, a Hart Trophy winner, a guy who scored 69 goals, but it like emboldens him to take more control of his line with a top six that is a Nylander line and a Matthews line. It'll just be interesting, as opposed to, well, there's the top line and then Nylander and Tavares. If both those guys are gone, and Marner and Tavares, and honestly, even just with Marner being gone, it does kind of change the perception of that and what they're going to ask of Austin Matthews, not in the grand scheme of things. They want him to score goals, but in terms of, you know, driving the line, being the more of a playmaker there as well. You know, you talk about the Florida Panthers, obviously every league is a copycat one. There's going to be a lot of talk about building out a roster that is big and mean and nasty. And I have a lot of time for that, as does Brad Treliving, obviously. But how important is it to not ignore the other part of hockey where you shoot the puck in the net past the other team? Like, I could see a world where the Leafs go out there and they build an incredibly mean, nasty, truculent, all the Brian Burke words, bottom six, but they still ultimately are staring down the barrel of two goals in a game seven, because that has been the problem more times than not. Like, how important is it for the Leafs to kind of walk both sides of that line and building the hockey team they want stylistically, while also making sure they actually have enough kind of difference makers in the bottom six?
Yeah, I mean, there's no more excuse for the bottom six to be, you know, on a budget. Like, that is a genuine positive. They've been, like, the constant theme around, I feel, Toronto is it's eye-popping, right? You see a 102-point player out the door, and that makes people nervous. But, like, every single year, they couldn't get it done in the playoffs. Like, they clearly, all of them, not just Mitch Marner, Austin Matthews, William Nylander, like, they all took a step back generally in their play, and they were based on a model where those guys were making so much money, John Tavares too included at that time, based on his salary. You know, they're making so much money that they had to carry the mail and make up for any other deficiencies in the roster, because they simply couldn't afford to fill the other holes. Like, you know, the Leafs were running a third line against Florida. Like, ice time wise, it was generally Scott Laudon, Steven Lorenz, Kelly Yarmgrok. And those guys make $4.5 million. in total. And they were playing a Florida line where Anton Lundell makes more than them in isolation. And we're not even on Brad Marchand yet. So, like, they couldn't fill it. Now they can. And so you're right. Like, yes, it would be nice to have some just a little bit more jam and a little bit more energy down there. And, you know, in terms of, you know, players who are a bit more physical and things like that. But, like, the third line, we should never look at that kind of third line again with this salary cap allotment going into the playoffs. Like, there should be serious, like, dollars and commitment being put towards it now, where you're looking and saying, like, this, like, a genuinely, it's a 3-4 line team, more so than, you know, the regular conversations all three of us have had over the past couple of years, where it's like, well, Matthews and Marner and, you know, the top guys don't do it, nobody's doing it.
Yeah, it certainly has felt that way. And I want to be abundantly clear about this. And Ben, I know you would agree with me on this. I think Auston Matthews should still do it. Like, just because there could be help. I don't think he shouldn't. Like,
maybe one time in a game.
Sometime. I was trying to say the line this time, man. That's not very fair of you. Okay, Mitch Marner. He is as good as gone. Friedman reporting. Vegas seem like the front runners here. We were kind of debating about this. It's like, I don't think there's a place that Mitch Marner goes where people in Leafs Nation go, you know what? Honestly, good on him. I wish him nothing but the best. I mean, there are people wired that way, but I don't think that'll be the prevailing sentiment. Where does Vegas rank on the public vitriol scale? Like, Ben threw out the it won't happen possibility of, like, he takes a one-year prove-it deal on, I don't know, the Florida Panthers. It's like, that's the worst thing that could humanly happen. Where does Vegas kind of fit in on that scale if he ends up signing there?
That's a good question. I'll only speak for I guess myself. I would view it as the scale is this. Anybody in the division would be, you know, like nuclear, like, you know, Florida, even Buffalo. It's just like, no one would respect it.
I gotta be honest, I kind of like to see that one.
Right. And then, so after the division, it's Carolina because of the Rantanen trade, like going to Carolina after you nix the trade and then the Leafs are empty handed and Rantanen just, you know, lit up the playoffs. They just, like, he couldn't stomach it. It would be a tough one to look at for however many years he were he to sign there. And then after that, it's the rest of the league. Yeah. Because I think a large part of it is, like, it's more to say it's really more about Marner than it is where he's going. And, you know, like, and how it's all kind of playing out, so to speak, right? Where there's, you know, probably some hurt feelings on both sides and just kind of the way it's going to ultimately, you know, seemingly play out. Like, I don't think at this point anyone's expecting a change of heart. So I just, you look at it, it's, you know, it's disappointing. I think both sides made mistakes along the way, but, that, you know, there should probably be some self-reflection on the Marner camp. I don't think there ever will be.
No.
But, you know, I think that's what makes it, like, it doesn't matter where he goes, because I think if people are looking at it and being honest, they're saying, well, you know, he seems to be playing the victim card, but I don't know if he's the victim.
I know that he's not, but yeah. No good deed goes unpunished. Anyways, enjoy 13x7, I guess, in Vegas wearing flip-flops, the arena. Yeah, good stuff. Anthony, appreciate it as always. Thanks, man.
Thanks for having me on, guys.
All right, Anthony Petrelli, writer of Leafs Notebook on MapleLeafsHotStove.com. He raised a good question, right? It's like, won the division with a limited number of points, right?
Yeah, like less than the year before.
Yeah, they had a 115-point season. They didn't win a division once. Mm-hmm. But they won the division, Brent.
Hang the banner.
And got to game 7 against the eventual Stanley
three
Cup
banners.
Champs.
Wow. Yeah.
There are a lot of numbers to suggest and a lot of games in which the eye test also agreed. The Leafs were not some, like, dominant bunch.
No.
They won through the strength of not allowing a lot of high danger chances.
Mm-hmm.
But also tremendous goaltending, it must be said.
Very good goaltending.
Like, amazing goaltending.
I remember a time when Anthony Stolarz was the best goalie in the NHL.
And I get it. Like, Auston Matthews wasn't at his best. So you can,
it's kind of a big thing.
Yeah, it was. But I mean, Anthony raised a good point. They did this with this incredible season and a resurgent season from John Tavares, but like trying to replicate this past season and treating this last regular season and just talking about the regular season as if it was some unqualified success because they won the division. A lot of things went right that could have, like, you play that season back 100 times, maybe they don't win the division. Maybe they don't even rack up the number of wins that they got.
Yeah, I think it's very likely, in fact. Let me just describe the season to you. Your best player goes to Germany with a phantom injury and is not himself for the entire year. Will that be the best year they've had? Probably not. Like, so much of it does just go back to Matthews, and it's going to go back to Matthews more because Mitch Marner's not going to be here, and John Tavares may not be here. So I think it's a fair point to raise that, like, hey, hold on a second. Just because they won the division doesn't mean they were a perfect hockey team. Hand up. I agree. I just don't know that because they weren't a perfect hockey team, losing two of the better players on it makes them a better one. Yes, in a perfect world where, yes, if Brad Treliving could just go, oh, can I have a beautiful 3C that, like, I'll take the Brock Nelson price if I'm getting a perfect 2C, and then I have Scott Laughton and poking around and Max Domi on it. Yeah, in a perfect world, but that doesn't exist. So I think, yes, it's possible the Leafs could retool and be a different and better team, capital T team, without those guys. I just don't know that it happens in year one of that, and then that's when you have to be very real about what the windows look like with this group, especially if Austin Matthews is going to be banged up. I don't know. Let's give him two healthy seasons out of every three. How many more do you have a great Matthews?
And secondarily to that, it's like Brad Treliving is going to send a message to John Tavares that, hey, you know what? We may be a worse hockey team without you, but so what?
Yeah.
We're not signing you to a $3x$6 million deal.
Yeah.
And then they are worse, so much so that they miss the playoffs or they make the playoffs and get pounded in the first round. And guess what? Brad Treliving's not around to see the fruits of his labor and, like, the message that is sent to his team and the rest of the NHL, because either he's fired in the offseason or he's on on the hottest of hot seats and has to make the win now moves next offseason.
Yeah, which is exactly what you want from your GM. Nah, it's a long-term plan. And it's important to mention, there's no one overseeing it.
Yeah, no.
It's not like Brendan Shanahan could come in and say, don't worry, everybody's safe. Not that that was the best thing either. Yeah. But it is Brad's world now. Absolutely.
All right. Blue Jays back in action against Cleveland. Tonight we'll talk to Joe Siddall next as the Fan Morning Show continues. Ben Ennis, Brent Gunning, Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
The most opinionated Maple Leaf show out there. Real Kipper and Bourne. Be sure to subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Fan Morning Show, Sportsnet 590 The Fan, Ben Ennis, Brent Gunning. Blue Jays back in action tonight, starting a three-game series in Cleveland. Eric Lauer on the hill against the lefty Logan Allen. Let's talk to Joe Siddall. How's it going, Joe?
Good morning, guys. All is well.
So this is an important series, as they all are for the Blue Jays, as we head towards the All-Star break. By the way, Yankees lost yesterday, so 3.5 games back of first. And the rotation's starting to look a little bit different. Like, we're gonna get Max Scherzer his return tomorrow, but Eric Lauer starts tonight. He's been so good since taking over what started as a bulk role. Now he's just a straight-up starter. Do you think this is the Eric Lauer we can expect the rest of the season? Is what you're seeing from him, like, is he showing enough that you believe that this is sustainable?
Well, certainly showing enough to earn the spot in the rotation, right? He's been so good in his length roles and then some spot starts, and then what he did in his last start, of course, was to me just hammered home the point that, yes, he is a starting pitcher now. Now, who knows? I mean, it's a long season. Like, you were just saying, the Blue Jays are 3.5 out. The Yankees lost yesterday. Like, this is going to be a daily thing the rest of the way now, right? And that's just the way it is, but especially in this stretch that they're on now. I can't think of a better guy to have on the mound in game one of a stretch that is going to be some pretty important baseball for this team. And you've got Cleveland and Boston, who are probably going to be right with you throughout this race in the wild card race. And, you know, hopefully it's an AL East race for the Blue Jays, but if not, it's a wild card race. And then they come home for the Yankees. Like, it's just, yeah, this is going to be quite a stretch. And they do get the Angels and then the White Sox and Athletics. But we will not talk about how those teams are not very good and those should be sweeps, right? That's just not going to be part of our vocabulary anymore after they lost 2-3 to the White Sox. It really is. I mean, I've always felt that way. Like, there is no team that's a pushover. Sure, you look at your schedule and you see some things, but, man, it just showed you that day when things fell apart to lose that series with the White Sox that you just can't think that way. But, yeah, I can't think of a better guy than Eric Lauer. He has just been so good. I call it an invisible. We've heard that before, that four-seamer that he used at the top of the zone and that cutter combination. And he kind of mixes in the other stuff. But for me, it's that four-seam cutter combo that's just been spectacular.
Yeah, it is remarkable for players, you know, as specifically pitchers like Eric Lauer, right? It's not always about the stuff you have. It's about finding the right mix of stuff and, you know, a finding the right, you know, game plan, whether it be with Alejandro Kirk, whether it's Pete Walker helping him work through that. I think it's remarkable what you can do when you kind of find the right mix for you. In terms of the rotation, and again, like, I'll echo everything you said about Lauer. He's been nails. Obviously, Turnbull didn't have the outing he wanted last time. Obviously, a lot is up in the air regarding Max Scherzer's outing tomorrow. Do you think there's a possibility of this team kind of running a six-man rotation to try to give some extra rest, be it to a Scherzer, be it to a Gausman, be it to a Bassett? Well, what would you make of the idea of this team running a six-man rotation? Obviously, you need the horses to do it, but do you think that's a possibility?
Yeah, I mean, it's always a possibility when you're dealing with those three names, Gausman, Brios, Bassett, right? I know they like to give that extra day. This is a nice stretch right here because of the day off Monday. It's a nice reset. These next starts will be with extra rest for most of these guys. The one question we'll have for today is we're interested to see that Lauer today and Max tomorrow. Mm-hmm. And that's exactly what they were trying to get away from, was having those two spots, you know, the Francis spot and the bullpen spot together earlier, just to separate that. Now, this will give Gausman, if he goes Thursday, I think 2 days extra rest. So I just thought maybe that you might see Gausman, but you never know. Maybe with his struggles, they feel so comfortable in Lauer going deeper that they're not too worried about using much of the bullpen today. Now that he's built up, maybe Lauer can go five, at least maybe six. And then this day, they're not really too worried about the bullpen. Whereas tomorrow with Max, who knows? Like, what if that thumb or something flares up and he goes an inning and a third? Like, that's the way I'm thinking. Yeah. And that turns into a huge bullpen day, and then you've got Gausman the next. So it'll be interesting. I would like to know how exactly this came to be. And six-man rotation, I mean, you can, and I think some guys don't mind that. Other guys like the regular routine, but we keep talking about the older guys in this rotation. And I mean, Bassett came out the other day, apparently, because he wasn't feeling well, right? These are things you're going to deal with throughout the course of a season. But the five right now, I'm ready to run with for a little while at least.
Yeah, they finally have five. Like, let's just let's see what they look like with like five before we get to six. So I thought you were going to be less pessimistic than I am about the Scherzer thing, because I totally expected the comments that he made after everything seems so great, right? Like, AAA throws 75 pitches, only gives up the one hit. And I know John Schneider and everybody around the organization said, yeah, all systems go, looks good, a little bit of soreness, no big deal. But Max Scherzer has never been optimistic about this the whole time. And maybe that's just like he's couching it and he's not setting expectations at an unrealistic level. But he makes me nervous every time he talks about this thumb thing, Joe. I don't know how you feel about it, but like, he makes me nervous when he just won't say, yeah, I feel great, I feel so much better.
That's what I was hoping to hear after that last start. We didn't hear it. I was like, ooh, that's not overly encouraging. But, you know, yes, he could be just kind of couching it, like you said, and just wants to make sure that he's going about his business the right way. But I thought he said something very interesting, too, that he could feel great after a AAA game, but pitching in the big league game, just it's just different, guys. It's like the adrenaline. It's everything. So whether that's referring to how his body is going to feel, how his about that thumb and the nerve issue is going to feel. I remember catching some big leaguers down on major league rehab sometimes, and they'd get lit up because they go down there and some kids, it was an A-ball. I think I've come back from my knee injury and I was rehabbing myself and I caught a big leaguer and these kids are hacking. And the pitcher comes up. We come up, he's like, what the hell? I got to get to the big leagues. It's a lot easier up there because you can set hitters up, you know. But in terms of his physical health, yeah, I don't put a whole lot of stock. I know we got to look at how he's doing down there and how the ball's coming out of his hand and all that. But yes, the adrenaline, the ballpark, the pennant race, everything that goes into it, it is going to be, every pitch will be absolutely different for Max tomorrow than it has been. And yes, anytime I hear the word nerve, it makes me nervous, you know, like if it's something regarding his thumb and all that, that stuff scares me. Right? That's not just like, oh, I've had a sore elbow and it's been feeling great and I've been rehabbing for like, yeah, this is different. And I'll feel better when he goes like 5 or 6 mm-hmm. and feels great the next day. Until then, I don't really feel like I'm going to count on him the rest of the way. So let's just see how this goes over the next, hopefully, several starts.
Yeah, you want to see the several starts. It'll also be, you know, I made the point with Ben. It's like these guys have side sessions between starts all the time and we never think about it. We will think about them with Max Scherzer. It's like anytime he's touching a baseball, it will be all hands on deck in terms of how do you feel? Do you want to tell us anything? Can we get you anything? Like whatever it takes to kind of shepherd him through that. Somebody who has been important to this Blue Jays core will be important to the rest of the season, Kevin Gausman. He's been going through it a bit lately. You know, I don't want to overstate the troubles because, again, there have been some exceptional outings, especially in late May. What do you make of the struggles you've seen out of Gausman, including getting lit up last time by the Diamondbacks last time out?
Yeah, you see a lot of frustration, right? And then I think you start seeing some searching. I remember when he gave up the 2-run homer to Eugenio Suarez on a slider, and I know it's kind of part of his arsenal against right-handed batters, but man, when he's going good, he doesn't need that thing. He's that two-pitch guy, right? And that's the problem, I guess. I mean, when you are a two-pitch guy and things go a little sideways, it's like, where do you go? As opposed to being that four-pitch starter, it's like, okay, maybe I'll throw the curveball less, go to the slider a little bit more, or throw the splitter less, go to the slider a little bit more, but that's not who he is. So I think there's a lot of searching going on. A lot of arm side misses, and for me, that's not just good finishing. And then it looked like he's trying, when I say arm side misses, you know, those balls just take off up and away against left-handers or the splitter that misses away. He's talked about that splitter being such a creature, right, in terms of adjusting his grip, and he wants that thing to go straight down more. And we saw some taking off to the right again, and that's not ideal because hitters can identify them. There's so much going on when you're a two-pitch pitcher, and that goes along, too, with this four-seam fastball. Like, yes, we know he uses it at the top of the zone, but he has to use it at the bottom of the zone. I mean, this feels like we've been going a couple years now with this discussion of him having to adapt. And now it's like when he's trying to adapt, the ball's not doing necessarily what he wants it to do out of his hand. And that's the real problem, right? Because now those balls are taken off and it's less than ideal. I don't know what the answer is. I'm sure mechanically, watching him, the first thing for me is mechanically he has to get back to being more, you know, that finish where he really drives that fastball down when he wants to go down and really elevates it. The other problem is I know top pitchers where, you know, he's got to adapt from being a four-seam up guy to using it down sometimes. So he goes down sometimes, but I remember talking to him in spring training. Then when he does want to go back up, it's a little trickier to get it back up there, like mechanically to get the ball back up in the zone. Mm-hmm. So challenges present other challenges. So I'm sure it's a lot of frustration, but this could be a good one. This is a Cleveland team that's really struggling with the bats right now. Maybe you catch a team at the right time to lock it back in, but ultimately it's going to be up to him to control the way the ball's coming out of his hand. And for me, that's mechanics 101.
It's easy for me to analyze Jeff Hoffman's last outing and what the problem was. It was a lack of pitcher fielding practice potentially with him on the Andrew Benintendi ground ball to the right side. And yeah, I know he gives up the hit after that, but yeah, it ends the inning and maybe the Blue Jays win that game and secure a series victory over the White Sox. But yeah, it's not been just that recently. He's been not the same dude we saw in April, Joe, where he was so good. He was so lights out. He was so nails. We've seen flashes of that, but it just has not been nearly as consistent. Yuriel Rodriguez is the picture of consistency out of the bullpen recently. Do you think there's a conversation about making a switch there at some point and maybe as early as tonight?
I would say no, but never say never, I guess. I mean, Yuriel's just been so good. You know, I think the closer conversation, I'm sure every team around baseball has this when your closer goes through a period where he's struggling. It's like when they fail, it's front and center because you've probably lost the game because of it. When I look at Hoffman, there are times when the stuff's not kind of coming out as well or the velocity dips a little bit. And the first thing you think about is injury and how is he healthy and how much has he been worked. And he worked an awful lot, obviously, in April. But when he was really good in April, you're coming off of spring training where you're pretty fresh. So he had a pretty good month in that regard. So it could just be workload. Could, you know, when could be injury related. We certainly don't think it is. Otherwise, he probably wouldn't be pitching. So, I mean, I wouldn't go that far. I'd pump the brakes on that. I don't want to say I'm not overly concerned about Jeff Hoffman. I'm not overly concerned about Jeff Hoffman when we see his good stuff. Now, why isn't it there sometimes? It could be the usage. Maybe they got to give him an extra day here and there, whatever the case may be. Maybe he's going through that period where, you know, sometimes we hear that dead arm thing in spring training. Maybe it happens during the season too. I mean, I know as a catcher, I'd go through stretches where it's like you're coming down, throwing the ball at second base, and it's like floating down there. You just go through stretches. It's a long season. Maybe he's going through one of those right now. You hope that's what it is. But I would, Yariel's been so good. It could have a little to do with where you are in the batting order. You know, I would be quite shocked, though, if Hoffman were to come in for the eighth inning tonight to get the bottom half of the order and Yariel comes in for the save because it's the top. Like, I just don't see that yet. To me, that's a bit, I don't want to say a panic move, but that's a bit of a panic move. But the one nice thing is you've got a guy in Yariel that if there is an issue at all, you could do that. But I don't see it happening just yet.
Yeah, and Jimmy Garcia is working his way back, too. I think he's got a rehab assignment upcoming here. Yeah, as much as you may believe in Hoffman, the numbers are not great, right? And Fangraphs WAR, he has a minus 0.2 WAR. You've gotten three innings out of Max Scherzer. You've gotten less than zero WAR out of Anthony Santander. Andrés Giménez hasn't exactly been the guy that hit three home runs in March. Those are all your offseason acquisitions. The Blue Jays are still only 3.5 games out of first. Imagine they got something from anybody. Like, and I know Hoffman has given you more than nothing, but the numbers would tell you that a replacement level player has been better than Hoffman. I don't agree with that, but like those are the four biggest offseason acquisitions, and largely you've gotten nothing from them. Joe, imagine they got something from somebody.
Oh, exactly. I think that's the best or most optimistic conversation for Blue Jays fans. Now, in saying all of that, you've gotten tremendous contributions all over the place in other places. Like think of what Ernie Clement has done. And, you know, Varsho's been injured, but he comes back and bangs out a bunch of home runs. And so they look forward to getting that back. The bottom of the order was really, we seemed like we were talking about the bottom half of that order for quite some time. And I think two big ones that maybe we're not talking about a whole lot are Springer and Kirk. Because I was the first one to say last year when they had problems with their offense that that was a big part of it. And now all of a sudden those two, I don't want to say unexpectedly, but because of last year, I wasn't expecting to be talking about Springer and Kirk this much. Now, George is scuffling a little bit lately, but those two guys have really come to the surface and really helped out. And those are the guys you had that maybe they're expecting to be better. And I wasn't necessarily expecting them to be better. I wasn't counting on that. So, yeah, I mean, hey, hopefully Santander, who knows what's going on there, but hopefully he can get healthy and be some sort of version of himself. And hopefully Vladdy can tap into that second half stuff that he does, or June plus, you know, June, July. And yeah, no, you're right. It's great. But I think there have been a lot of really good stories. I mean, think of what Little has done. Think of what Fluharty has done, even though he's going through some struggles right now. There have been a lot of other stories that I would say you're right. Like the guys they acquired haven't necessarily done what you were expecting, but so many other guys have. So it's kind of been that whole effort, but you don't get everybody going at the same time, right? When you get everybody rolling at the same time, that's when you roll out 15 of 16 wins, you know, or when you're pitching and hitting work together, that's when that's awesome. But it's been a funny stretch. You know, what did they just, I think they won like 12 of 14 and now they've dropped like 6 of 9. Like you want to talk about a roller coaster.
Yeah. Absolutely. They should time it correctly to be playing their best baseball when the Yankees come to town next week. That would be smart.
That would be good.
That would be a good idea to do that. Joe, enjoy the game tonight. Thanks for this, buddy.
All right, guys. Have a great day.
You too. Joe Siddle. It's hilarious the way sports and baseball work, where it's like, last year was the year. We're internal improvements, Brent. We're going to get these improvements internally. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Bo and Vlad, they're going to lead us to the promised land. We don't need these big swings in the offseason. Like, Justin Turner's going to be enough to supplement those guys. And everybody failed. Like, the internal, they had internal regression. Like, George Springer was awful. And Alejandro Kirk was degrees of awful. And they got some awful performances out of the guys they expected great ones.
A lot of people were bad. I agree.
Then Vladdy was good when it didn't matter as much. And now this is the year where they go out and they get the splashy free agent. They get the guy that hit 43 home runs. They get the future Hall of Famer to bolster this rotation. They get one of the big free agent relief pitchers who's going to be in the back of their bullpen, has a great walkout thing at Rogers Center where you like you put your phone out and it's got a flashlight. And then they got, hey, he's not the best offensive player in the world, but he's shown proof of concept. Like, there's a couple of years removed, but hey, if Andrés Giménez could ever recapture any of that, at worst, you're going to get incredible defense out of him. They've all been awful.
Yep.
And some of them have been gone. Like, Max Scherzer hasn't been awful. Those three innings were, like, there was flashes in there.
Anthony Santander was bad when he was here.
It's awful.
Yeah,
like,
so bad.
Like, almost a minus one war.
That's, ouch.
That happens when you don't play position. Like, you're a DH and you suck.
Yes.
I just, but they're in this position because, yeah, George Springer, Fountain of Youth, Alejandro Kirk, returning to form, Vladdy and Bo being good-ish, and Addison Barger. And just imagine if, like, one of those guys, like, just Santander.
Sure.
Who's his normal self. Seem to be in first place right now.
Yeah, yeah, and Ernie Clement doing incredible things. I'm not lumping him in with the Santander. The guys before is where I'm putting him there. Yeah, it's remarkable, and it's been a disaster, but Santander comes back healthy and hits a little bit. Not ask him to hit 40 bombs anymore. That ship has sailed. That's remarkable what could happen.
Yep, we'll see tonight in Cleveland. We'll be back tomorrow with another edition of the Fan Morning Show. Ben Ennis, Brent Gunning, Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Good morning.